The Nick Handley Show.
Beer me.
What's that?
Hand me that water. I always say beer me. Gets a laugh like a quarter of the time.
What about music? Do you have any music?
Yeah. I should have said so. Give me the beat, boys, and free my soul. I want to get lost in your rock and roll and drift away. Give me the beat, boys, and free my little soul.
I was thinking more like a CD or a CD.
Your call, dude. My girlfriend made an awesome mix. Beer me that disc.
AM 590.
That one gets me every time. Lord, beer me strength. That's my favorite one. 4 o'clock hour, we go here on the Nick Handley Show alongside TJ Henning. Going to the DJ's dugout inbox earlier today, Pender J had let me know that he was checking out. It was on Sundance, the original Karate Kid. And he didn't bring this up, but this got me thinking, because the scene that they're showing, you remember in the semifinals when Daniel gets his leg bent awkwardly, where the Cobra Kai member by the name of Bobby puts an elbow in Daniel LaRusso. Oh, I'm sorry. He doesn't put the elbow. That's Johnny. He goes up, does like a jumping sidekick, but strikes Daniel's leg. And, I mean, you think Daniel just got shot. I mean, Daniel was a bit of a drama queen. Can we all agree that Ralph Macchio, Daniel LaRusso in Karate Kid 1, was a bit fragile?
I thought so.
Yeah, he was. And so Bobby is ordered by Sensei Kreese to sweep the leg. To get him out of commission. So he goes, but Sensei, I'll be disqualified. And he says, out of commission. And you could tell Bobby doesn't want to do it. You know, he's grappling with that decision. But as every one of those perfect little foot soldiers for Sensei Kreese's Cobra Kai, Bobby followed instructions. And is immediately when Daniel hits the mat with bullet holes in him and everything, you know, Bobby's right there apologizing. He feels terrible. He knows that most likely he ended Daniel's ability to compete. It was going to make Johnny the winner and the defending champion as well. All was good in the Cobra Kai dojo. So the scene that Pender J is showing me is Bobby with this epic leg sweep. It was just one of the random moments. Now, Bobby kind of had a temper, too. And he's being separated from the judge. But he has this really sweet, like, guy goes up, tries to sidekick him in the head, and he goes right underneath with this sweeping leg sweep, man. I mean, this is epic. And I remember all the scenes they showed of Bobby. It's like, that dude's legit. So my question is, did Sensei Kreese do Bobby wrong? Could Bobby have beat Johnny in an all Cobra Kai final at the All Valley Karate Tournament?
Whoa!
Yeah, mind blown. Because you know what I'm going to say? We are just going over some of those college football odds. I think Bobby had a much better shot of beating Johnny than Daniel. Take that. Bobby was no slouch. And who would know Johnny's moves better than Bobby? I mean, the guys worked out together every day at the Cobra Kai Dojo. So I think Bobby was sent in to take out Daniel LaRusso, not because they wanted Daniel out of commission. I think Sensei Kreese was worried that his top student, Johnny, was about to get beat by the up-and-coming Bobby. I'm telling you, Bobby got done wrong. Bobby could have been the All-Valley Tournament champion had he not been ordered to take Daniel LaRusso out. You might disagree with me. That might be a crazy hot take, but I'm telling you, Bobby could have won that tournament.
This is quite the theory. I have to admit, did not expect this one.
Yeah. You didn't see that one coming, did you? Totally out of left field. Yeah, I'm watching this clip, and I'm like, dang, that was a really solid leg sweep right there. The athleticism the ground attack by Bobby. I don't think Johnny could have matched up with it. Johnny was, he was more finesse. I don't think there was much to Johnny. I mean, the guy lost on the freaking crane kick. If you don't know what's coming when a dude's got one leg up with his hands perched in the air with his palms facing forward, what do you think he was doing? I mean, seriously, what do you think he was doing? Bobby's not falling for that. Bobby's going to wait and wait. And you know what? With that one leg up, guess where Bobby's going? Leg sweep. Because Daniel had one good leg. If Johnny was any good, he would have gone charging after Daniel. He would have waited, made Daniel kind of flinch it, and then he would have leg sweeped him. Could have avoided that crane kick. It bothers me. Because first there was the apology by Bobby. So that showed you right there. His character was humanized. And even when they were bullying Daniel, when they were dressed up as the skeletons at the Halloween party and Daniel puts a hose in the bathroom when Johnny's rolling a joint. This movie, as I start to explain this movie, how was I ever entertained by it? It's still good, though. But then they're all dressed up as skeletons. They all chase Daniel, who's dressed up in a shower. He literally is a human shower. They're kicking the crap out of him, and it's Bobby who said, I'm telling you, man, leave him alone. He's had enough. Bobby always knew where the line was drawn. So now as I start to talk about how Bobby, I think, was robbed of the All-Valley title, I think Bobby was a good character.
But did Bobby cross that line? Was he a habitual line stepper?
No, Johnny was Johnny and Dutch. Dutch was the blonde guy that was not quite as good, wasn't very good at karate, but he was kind of the trash talker. It was always kind of, he was the habitual line stepper.
But think about this, though, and correct me if I'm wrong, because I've only seen The Karate Kid once or twice.
How many? Did you see the Jaden Smith one?
No.
Okay, good.
I haven't.
If you said you'd seen that more, I would have been disappointed.
No.
Okay.
But had the major injury not happened to Daniel LaRusso, we would have not gotten to see the magical powers of one Mr. Miyagi
with his
healing ways.
That is true. It's the final that I think the people wanted to see. The final that we all deserved in the 1984 Karate Kid Classic was Johnny versus Bobby, not Johnny versus Daniel. And I'll even throw you another one. Maybe Bobby versus Daniel in a legitimate fight. Because honestly, if he doesn't take Daniel out, I think Daniel loses that one. I don't think Daniel had the chops to take down Bobby.
So, 1984, I'm 6 years from being born. Were you in middle school?
I'm five. No, I'm five, okay. Man. Come on. The Bears hadn't even won the Super Bowl yet.
Okay, so you couldn't have gone to see that in theaters. Yeah. Do you remember the first time you saw it, though? So, with friends, your family,
probably,
just by yourself?
Yeah, probably a VHS tape.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't think I saw it in the theaters. Because, I mean, I would have gone to movies at five. I don't know. My mom might have to answer that. I don't think I saw it in the movie theaters. But
how about the following ones? Karate Kid 2 or 3?
Karate Kid 2 I saw in the theaters. Definitely did. And see, okay, fast forward to Karate Kid 2. So the opening scene is the aftermath of the All-Valley Tournament.
Really?
And
okay, so I've avoided the Karate Kid 2 and 3 because I've heard bad things.
Yeah, 3's no good. 2 is a fight to the death, though.
Really?
Yeah. It gets real out there in Okinawa. But in the opening scene, it's Sensei, Kreese, Johnny, all the Cobra Kai cadets. And again, Bobby tries to interfere as Sensei Kreese is dogging Johnny's runner-up finish. Because remember, after Johnny gets beat, he does hand the trophy to LaRusso and says, "You're all right, LaRusso." So it's like, oh, they all now respect one
Happy
another.
Ending.
Yeah. It's like competitive. Game respects game, pretty much. Well, Sensei Kreese wasn't having it. He was pretty upset. So he is like strangling Johnny, breaks his trophy, and is like strangling him. And Bobby tries to intervene. He's like, dude, he's had enough, man. And that's where Miyagi comes in and ends up battling Sensei Kreese. and twists his nose and goes, honk. I'm a loser. Like, the fact that I can rattle this off, like, scene for scene, I need to get a life. But I did. I just, this simple video clip that was sent to me by Pender J showing this epic leg sweep. I'll retweet it. But I'm just telling you, Bobby, to me, was the strongest member of the Cobra Kai. Not Johnny. Johnny, to me, was all finesse. He tried to bully you with intimidation. But when it came down to it, technique-wise, I'm telling you, Bobby was more skilled. But we never got to see that final because Sensei Kreese ordered him to get disqualified so he could take out LaRusso.
Yuri on Twitter asks if either of us have seen the Cobra Kai series on YouTube.
Yes,
TV.
It's good. It's really good.
I've heard it's good. I've not seen it.
Yeah, it's great. Well, remember, we were talking, gosh, this has been like 6-7 months ago, sort of the sad reality. Tommy. So there was Bobby, Johnny, Tommy, Cobra Kai, and Dutch, which just doesn't go. You need to have an E at the end. Dutchie. Pass the Dutchie. Bobby was the guy that was known as the one in the background that says, give him a body bag, yeah! And then has that really squeaky, Weasley laugh. Like, he died. I know, I didn't mean to get too deep on you, but he died. He passed away.
Oh, yeah, I think I heard about that, yeah.
His name was Rob Garrison was his name. Bobby's name is Ron Thomas. So in a way, this is kind of a tribute to Bobby of Karate Kid. Probably the most overlooked character in the movie. The one who, in his heart of hearts, wanted to do the right thing, but he was mixed up with the wrong crowd. So if you wanted to do a, you know, everything's a reboot these days, you know? If you want to do a Karate Kid reboot, you could kind of blend one and two together, where Daniel teams up, with Bobby, and they go up against some real bad hombres. Like, see, because I feel like Bobby always wanted to do the right thing. He had orders. So I feel like there was a humanized character there that had a lot more talent than we gave him credit for. Everybody thinks of Johnny. Everybody thinks of Daniel. To me, Bobby was the real winner. That's just my thought on Karate Kid 1. Yep. So next time you watch Karate Kid 1, I ask you to appreciate the fact that Bobby knew that there was a line. He had morals. He would take it to an extent, but he knew where the line was drawn. And just appreciate his overall skill. And tell me, after watching that in great detail, that you cannot come back, look me in the face, and tell me that Bobby would not have beat Johnny. Because I know for a fact Bobby would have fared much better than Daniel. He would have beat both Daniel and Johnny. There you go. Dropping the mic right there. All right, Mike Schaefer, Husker 24/7, joins us next. All right, so I tweeted out the clip from Karate Kid, courtesy of Pender J. You make the call, man. Maybe we'll put it on a Twitter poll. Could Bobby have won the All-Valley Tournament had he not been DQ'd? I vote a very strong yes. I have no problem whatsoever endorsing Bobby as the real winner. Let's go to the DJ's Dugout inbox. Email Nick at am590espnradio.com. We were talking about the draft. This comes from our buddy Todd, who says, you basically draft someone based on their college careers, I'm pretty sure, and with all of the extensive workouts and interviews, blah, blah, how many times have teams had busts? Well, yeah, I mean, you can get all the information in the world. And this is why I think recruiting also sometimes, you're gambling to some extent because you never know how everyone is going to handle each level of competition, whether we're talking about football or baseball. My whole thing with the NFL draft is, unless there is a definitive answer on when organized team activities will be able to resume, take place, minicamps, rookie minicamps, I don't see any reason why you couldn't delay the NFL draft to allow general managers, even if they can't get their team facilities open, you allow general managers to have more time to evaluate and scout players the best of their abilities with the resources that they currently have at their disposal, which are not the resources that they've had in previous years. I just don't see the rush. And I'm all about Schefter's idea of, hey, let's go each round, each night. That's fine. But unless we're running up on training camp, which we wouldn't be, what's the harm of delaying the draft another month? I just don't see it. Mike Schaefer, Husker 24/7 Sports, joining us here on AM 590 Hotline. And Mike, I know you are also a fan of just pointless dribble when it comes to movies. Maybe not as much as I am. But I know that you always can give a solid take. Now, did you see at least enough of the original Karate Kid to be able to speak well on it?
I have not watched the Karate Kid in probably 20 years, maybe a little longer.
Oh, wow.
It's not a movie that ever resonated with me in the sort of nostalgic way that it has for other people. I have probably... This is a very bad late 80s, early 90s movie that you may or may not remember. I have probably seen Three Ninjas more than I've seen Karate Kid.
I have seen that.
Yeah. So I'm not a big Karate Kid guy. So I haven't done the Cobra Kai thing that I think YouTube TV has or whatever. So I may not be the best person.
Okay. Well, you remember the scene, though, when Daniel gets taken out by one of the members of the Cobra Kai by the name of Bobby. He gets taken out. You think he's going to be done and Johnny's going to get the trophy. It's all over. Of course, Miyagi rubs his hands together. He makes Daniel's leg better, and we get that epic final. My hot take today is I feel Bobby, the guy who took out Daniel, would have actually had a chance to beat his own teammate, Johnny, had he not gotten DQ'd, because I think Bobby had a lot of skill that got overlooked. That's my hot take, is that I would have rather seen Bobby take on Johnny in the All-Valley Final and not Daniel. Am I crazy?
But because it's a movie, you need the most villainous guy or the guy most positioned to be the villain to be in that final, right? Like, he's maybe not the most talented. I think you're right on this. I mean, I think this is fair. I don't have any problem with that.
Okay.
But I also understand why Hollywood would need it in such a way that you get the most villainous guy there.
Yeah. Hey, this is the stuff we're talking about right now under quarantine, you know?
Yeah, no. I mean, I was listening to you talk about the NFL draft, and I don't think teams need more time to be able to evaluate and scout because the game film is all right there.
Well,
like, everything they need to know is available to them on that game film. I mean, yeah, they might not be able to have the in-person interviews where they can ask the delightfully dumb questions that get revealed and then we mock them for it. But I have never been they had the combine. I've never been a big pro day person.
Yeah.
Because I don't think the numbers that come out of there generally are as accurate as what you're going to get otherwise. They do miss out on the individual workouts and the ability to bring guys to, you know, for the Vikings, it'd be Winter Park. For the Bears, I don't know where their secondary team stuff is at in Chicago. But they'd miss out on that. And I do think there's probably makes a difference in how you evaluate some of the guys on the further end. But some of your most known quantities, you're already going to sort of know. And you still have that game film to fall back on. And this is why they've been having guys that are now draft eligible. You've been scouting for 3 years. I mean, this is why you pay the guy who wears the quarter zip that says Vikings on it and sits in Memorial Stadium's press box. And so, if you can't trust the judgment of the people you've been paying for 3 years to do this, it does seem a little odd to me. But I also get where you come from with there isn't a rush.
Right. That's my only issue.
Right. But at the same time, you could argue that the NFL would be bigger heroes to their fan base by resuming and resembling normalcy as much as possible by having that draft.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, I don't, and TJ had a similar take, and I don't think you guys are wrong with your thoughts on it, too. That's my only thing is, if the general managers are all kind of unified in the thought that they could benefit from more time, if you were up against some kind of truncated timetable because you got to get to OTAs, you got to get to minicamp, I totally get why you would want to keep it on schedule. But knowing that that's probably not going to happen, I don't see the harm in it. But I think it's a good point you bring up, though, about trying to have some sense of normalcy, too, when it does come to having it on the date that it was originally scheduled for. So I can definitely see both sides of it from that standpoint. I just think, if the general managers are truly concerned that they will not be able to conduct the kind of, you know, in-person interviews and some of the workouts that might pertain to their actual system, then, okay, if they need a couple more weeks to get creative on how they want to evaluate, then what's really the harm, I guess?
Yeah. Can I ask you something? Do you have a favorite player in this draft? Not necessarily someone that you think the Bears are going to get, but just a guy that you're just kind of excited to see his NFL career?
Chase Young, without question.
Is it because of that some people have question as to how he's going to produce against top teams because of the way his numbers looked against Michigan or Clemson, or just because he's a freak?
I think it's more of the athlete himself and some of the guys that I kind of consider to be, you know, pretty plugged in to the NFL talent evaluation. Guys like Louis Riddick and, you know, some of the more mainstream guys that you hear, they think not only is he going to be a surefire all-pro type guy, but they think he's going to be a Hall of Famer. Like Joel Klatt was talking about that too. I respect a lot of what Joel Klatt says. I think taking what he did at college is one thing, but just, yeah, kind of what you pointed out, his natural ability and just that freakish athleticism. I'm not saying it's going to happen, but I'm so intrigued to see how his career plays out with the potential that resides there.
Yeah, that's really interesting, and I'm glad you said that about Joel Klatt, because I think he's maybe the best in college football.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you had me do a draft of all of the college football analysts, that's maybe the guy I would want number one. I really enjoy the way that he does things. I enjoy the way that he thinks. I like Joel Klatt a lot, so I'm glad that we're on the same team.
We are. We're Team Klatt. That's good. Shafe, what are you tracking right now? I know recruiting still has been giving us some storylines and some headlines for Nebraska. What are you doing these days?
You know what's kind of weird, Nick, is that recruiting is always, this time of year, we're always talking about it. But it's kind of the only thing happening in college sports right now.
Right.
And so there's a lot going on, and I've kind of noticed that you have a lot of recruits that are starting to sort of recognize that they have this platform, if you will. And you're getting a lot of these top lists and you're seeing some commitments because they're kind of the biggest thing in town and they're being covered in that way. And of course we always do that in Nebraska as it is anyways, but you know, Christopher Paul committed on Friday. I've seen Nebraska mentioned, I'd say in a good handful of 7-8 different guys that have put out their list of their top teams recently. You know, this morning, Tommy Hill, a wide receiver, defensive back, athlete, out of Florida, out of the Orlando area, Edgewater High School. He put out his top five. Nebraska's in that, along with Arizona State, Georgia, Oklahoma, and Ohio State. So some really good teams to be in company with there. And he was expected to take a visit in April to Nebraska. And so their relationship is really good. He's someone to keep an eye on. And then Landon Jackson, an outside linebacker, 6'6", 240 pounds, just a pure pass rusher at the high school level. You'd obviously have to get better and stronger and all of that at the college level, but the kind of guy that Nebraska fans would pretty much sell their grandparents for at this point to get is the sort of player they really, really need. They've got a ton of competition to go through, but they made his top 12, which you can mock that all you want, but Nebraska's going to have to beat out the likes of Alabama, Oklahoma, Oregon, Ohio State, teams like that, Notre Dame, Miami, LSU, to get this kid. But they've got a good spot there, too, and they've been recruiting him for more than a year. So there's a ton of stuff to follow in recruiting, but just jumping around here and going back to Christopher Paul, big get for Nebraska. I actually just talked to him on my own radio show today. Great, great kid. He is going to be a fan favorite. I have little doubt about that. And if he provides the kind of production he did in high school with 157 tackles and 4.5 sacks, I think he'll be more than a fan favorite at Nebraska.
Mike, I want to get your thoughts because this kind of got my attention last week when we saw the 24/7 rankings out, Devon Jackson being ranked the highest rated outside linebacker in the country. You've had a chance to see some of what he can do. I know Nebraska offered him early in the process, and hopefully that bodes well. I'm not trying to get too geeked out about him, but boy, it's hard not to when you see that early ranking. What have you liked about him, and do you think that he can hold down that ranking?
Yeah, I don't know if he'll stay at 25. That's going to be really hard, but 24/7 Sports loves Devin Jackson. I mean, they love how he can move. They love the way he can run. They think he can be a true 4-3 outside linebacker. I think he probably slides inside as a 3-4 inside linebacker with that speed that you can get sideline to sideline or you can go north-south with. But if he continues to grow and he gets to, say, 6'3", 6'4", he's definitely going to be an outside linebacker. He hasn't played as much as you would think as somebody that's rated number 25 in the country and a 4-star recruit. He's played for Burke, but it hasn't been, you know, he hasn't been a full-time starter. And so he's got a lot to kind of prove to live up to this lofty expectation. But from a pure athleticism standpoint, this is a linebacker that can absolutely run, and he is a chiseled 6'2", 200 pounds that's only going to get bigger as time goes on.
Shafe, lastly, I know tomorrow we should be actually getting together and watching the Indians play. That's not going to happen. I know you had a spring training trip that was planned that didn't happen. So are you going to be decked out in Cleveland gear tomorrow, regardless of the circumstances?
Yeah, I'll probably have to. Wow, my voice really cracked there. Well before today.
You're excited. I get it.
That was embarrassing. Man, delete the audio of this, TJ, please. But I will certainly have to throw on the movie Major League or something tomorrow to make it feel like it's opening day. You're like this, you're a baseball guy. Opening day means a lot to me. Just those first few days of starting, even when the Indians are bad, like it's not the first 2 days of March Madness. It's not the divisional round in the NFL, which I love. I love those Saturday, Sundays. But it is up there with some of my favorite sports days. Like when you get that kind of stretch of when they would do it on the Sunday night and you have that opening baseball game and then you get the all-day Monday
right.
and you get the teams hadn't played yet on Tuesday. I love that. I don't know why, but there's just something magical about the return of baseball for me that I know it's going to happen. I know they're going to play games at some point, but it hurts a little bit that it was supposed to be this week, that I was supposed to be in Arizona and Phoenix and Las Vegas and all of that stuff. I mean, but, you know, we're better off for it. I'm still alive, and so you gotta count your blessings. Right?
Absolutely. How's Slider handling it? Seeing a lot more of you, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, I work from home already, so I think he's pretty well used to it. He's not great at social distancing. Golden Retrievers generally aren't going to be very good at that.
Right.
But we're getting some walks in. The weather has turned for the better, and I'm actually in the car right now, and I'm going to take him to the park, so he's going to be very happy.
Awesome. Well, I know Slider will enjoy what could have been opening day with you tomorrow.
Absolutely.
Yep. Shafe, be well, my man. Stay healthy. We'll talk to you soon, okay?
All right, take care, and I will work on that voice squeak. It will never happen.
Oh, it's going to be on a promo here coming soon. Don't you worry.
That sounds terrible. You're going to lose listeners.
Talk to you soon, man.
See ya.
Mike Shafer, Husker 24/7. That was pretty good.
Yeah, I had the same thought. No, that's not going to delete. That's either a promo or an intro right
Yeah,
there.
It's a promo intro, especially when if he would have just brushed right by it, didn't say anything.
Yeah.
We would have let it slide, but the fact that he stopped in his thought and acknowledged it, well, yeah, it's just what we do. And Shafe's a good sport. I mean, I know he can handle that, so that's fine. I'm glad we went to the Major League Baseball conversation because when we come back, there are still all kinds of different proposals out there. In fact, TJ, the Blue Jays general manager agrees with you. Maybe some 7-inning twin bills could be played. And could we see Major League Baseball going into December? Gosh, I hope not. But we'll get into all of that here coming up next. Got to get back to some of Scott Frost's conversation last night on Sports Nightly with Greg Sharp. We'll do that in the 5 o'clock hour. Conversations continuing about Major League Baseball, if and when we get the start of the season, and a lot of different proposals. With the very latest, here is Jeff Passan earlier today.
What date is baseball looking at in order to try to put together what they would consider to be a sensible season?
You know, Greeny, baseball is looking at a lot of dates right now, but the target at the moment is in early June. The idea is that players would go back around mid-May for a second kind of spring training. That would be an abbreviated one, you know, two and a half weeks. And that because pitchers wouldn't be ramped up, they would expand the rosters and go back and play games. We don't know if it would be in front of empty stadiums. We don't know if fans would be there. They would love, though, to start the season in early June while recognizing that July ultimately may be the likelier and better time to begin the season.
And in an effort to play as many games in that period of time as they can, whenever it is they're able to start, in your piece, there is the discussion of playing multiple doubleheaders. We had Mark Teixeira on the show on Monday, and he was steadfastly against the idea of playing a lot of doubleheaders to try and make up for the missed games. Can you take us a little bit into the conversations they're having about that?
Yeah, I understand exactly why Tex is like that, because doubleheaders are difficult on the body, because they can be difficult mentally as well. But these are desperate times right now, especially for the baseball players who want to go out there and play games. And that is one thing, when you have contention in the relationship between the owners and the players, that everybody agrees on. We want to play as many games as possible. And if it takes doing doubleheaders, Greeny, on, say, Wednesday and Saturday, that is something that they will do to get as many games in, because for the owners, that means more revenue coming in. For the players, that means with their salary prorated by the number of games played, more money for them.
ESPN's Jeff Passan there on Get Up This Morning. And TJ, you and I were going back and forth on this one, kind of disagreed as far as doubleheaders. Now, I said if it was something that had a low frequency, a low weekly frequency, I could understand it. Now, I'll give you credit. You brought up the question, could you do 2 7-inning games during those doubleheaders? Now, if you were going to do a Wednesday and, say, Saturday doubleheader proposal, at least for the first month, to try to get as many games, I'm fine with that. I'd be okay with that. There was one that floated out there, and I don't even know, I can't remember who said it, saying every other day, and I just didn't think that that was feasible. Now, the Blue Jays general manager, Ross Atkins, is with you, though, suggesting 7-inning doubleheaders could be a way for MLB to squeeze more games into what is going to be a condensed season. And I've already said, seen this when I was doing work with the Omaha Storm Chasers at the AAA level. If they do have either some weather that impacted a day and they have to get in a doubleheader, I've seen 2 7-inning games. They've done that. And I think there's probably more familiarity with that type of plan. So there's different ways to do this. As long as you are not doing a month's worth of, say, 3 to 4 days of doubleheaders, 1 to maybe 2, I could see that working. I could see that being okay. I still stand on what I said yesterday, is that the wear and tear, if you pile up these games right out of the gate, that your postseason will suffer, or even the end of the regular season will suffer. And that's when you do have teams trying to vie for postseason slots. I don't think it's good. But if you do want to maximize the opportunity of getting as many games in as you can, and you want to implement some sort of doubleheader schedule, like Jeff Passan mentioned, I think that would be acceptable. I do. I think that could be interesting. And again, a lot of these things, nothing is ironed out, but we'll see. A lot of these decisions will be made in the coming weeks, and we'll just kind of have to sit back and see where MLB is. But yes, tomorrow was supposed to be the scheduled opening day for the 2020 season. So wear your team colors tomorrow anyway. All right, coming up in our Take Out Tonight segment, we're talking to Derek from Cunningham's Pub and Grill on how you can still enjoy Cunningham's Neck. Okay, wrapping up our 4 o'clock hour every night, we have our new segment, very important segment too, that we are very happy to bring to you, and that is Take Out Tonight. And we are featuring tonight our friends at Cunningham's Pub and Grill at 108th and Old Mill. In fact, a seasoned veteran on the radio, my guy Derek, who would always provide some great craft beer knowledge. Now, Derek, obviously we're not talking under those circumstances, which was always fun. We'll have to do that again when we get
to the good old days.
It was.
The good old days.
Yeah. When we get back to normal, we'll have to get going again on that. But, you know, it's so important to get messages out. In the first place that I actually took advantage of the takeout curbside service was a week ago. It feels like it was a month ago, but a week ago on St. Patrick's Day that my wife and I, we still wanted to have some kind of St. Patrick's Day tradition. And that meant, Reuben, you guys have a great one. That was fantastic. It was very easy to utilize your services. So my question now is, how are things going right now, and how are people able to still enjoy Cunningham's great menu?
Well, first, I'd like to say thank you for coming in. Amen. Cunningham's or any of the Irish bars here in town, that was a big deal for us, because it's kind of a double-edged sword for a lot of us Irish businesses, in that you got a lot of inventory, you're expecting a huge day, mm-hmm. and then, you know, they shut St. Patrick's Day down. So I want to thank everybody. It helped us get through a lot of our inventory. You know, it wasn't a typical day, but at least we got rid of, we moved through some of that corned beef. So thank you to everybody that supported the Irish restaurants on St. Patrick's Day. That was a huge thing for all of us. And then as far as getting a hold of Cunningham's, you know, we're trying to take advantage of course, the internet, the phones, you know, Facebook messaging, emailing. So we're trying to really utilize all those technology so that people can get through and get an order placed with us right now.
I've noticed on Facebook that not only are you guys getting the phone number and the ways that you can get carry out or curbside, but also a lot of the different daily specials. Is that something you guys are continuing to do throughout this time?
You know, we definitely are still trying to push some of our most popular specials. You know, it's one of those things that people really enjoy those things. Mm-hmm. So we want to keep giving people the things that they like. And, you know, we're not trying to rework the wheel here as far as our business. We still want to be able to do the things that we've been doing for a long time. We just got to do it in a different fashion. So it's been an interesting transition for sure.
Well, and Derek, we've talked about on this show some of the great menu items. I know I'm a huge fan of the mac and cheeseburger, the blueberry sriracha wings. As far as the current menu right now that people can take advantage of through takeout or curbside, what does that menu look like? Is it more of the traditional menu, or has it been pared down a bit?
Well, we've had to take our menu and we've reduced it pretty drastically. Just, you know, you have to lower your outgoing costs. You got to keep your inventory a little bit lower. And get rid of some of the more perishable items.
Yeah,
it's really hard to keep a lot of lettuce and mixed greens and that type of thing in-house if you're not moving through it as quickly as you'd like.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you'll find that a little bit around town where people start, you know, limiting their menu options. And a lot of that, too, has to do with the transition to carry out. You know, you're trying to get a lot of stuff in boxes and get them out the door to people. So if you keep your full menu, you're kind of adding to what could be a little bit chaotic. And I think a lot of the restaurants have transitioned pretty well. And people just honestly thank you for the business, and just remember to be patient with folks, because this is a whole different thing going from putting your food on a plate and getting it out to your table to trying to get it in a box, get it in a bag, get it out to your car, and make sure that everything in between is accurate so you're getting the right food, getting a quality product at the same time.
Derek from Cunningham's 108th and Old Mill joining me here, our Takeout Tonight segment. I want to ask you, you know, if I want to make a place an order, is it best to call you, to contact you through Facebook, and do I have the option of either takeout or curbside, or is only one available? How does that work?
We're doing both, takeout and curbside. And honestly, if you shoot us a message on Facebook, as a smaller business, it's really hard to change your website on a daily basis and mm-hmm. to pivot. So Facebook offers us an opportunity to get a more up-to-date change as far as hours of operation, that type of thing. You can change that every day, whereas the website's a little more difficult to get everything updated in a more fluid situation. So, yeah, if you go to Facebook, check out the menu, check out the specials, and then you can shoot us a message with your phone number, and then we'll call you back. You know, we have one phone line coming in.
Yeah.
So we weren't really expecting to have multiple, or ever have the need to have multiple lines to have so much volume on our telephone.
Right.
So Facebook's a great avenue. Message us with your phone number, and we'll call you back as quickly as we can.
Yeah, and easy to find. Just go to Facebook, Cunningham's Pub and Grill. Like the page if you haven't already. And lastly, Derek, what are the hours right now from weekdays to weekends?
So we've closed Sunday, and we've limited the kind of in-between hours. So the prime times, 11 to 2, were there. And then in the afternoon, we've been closing to limit our staffing, to lower some of our costs.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, Monday we're open 11 to 2, and then Tuesday through Friday it's 11 to 2, and then we reopen at 5 to 8. And then Saturday we're open from noon to 9,
okay.
or noon to 8, excuse me. So it's a little wonky, but it's kind of what you got to do. You got to keep a really close eye on your expenses. The restaurant industry is already a very the margins aren't the greatest in the restaurant industry, so you've got to be very careful. And in times like this, when your income is reduced, you know, 70-80%, you've got to be extremely cautious. So it's been interesting.
Yeah, and we appreciate you informing us. And again, it sounds like Facebook's the best place to go for the new menu and how to get your orders placed with Cunningham's Pub and Grill over at 108th and Old Mill, right off of 114th in the West Dodge area there. You can't miss them. Derek, really appreciate you joining us, informing us on what you guys are now doing to still be able to serve our community. And hey, we appreciate your guys' service and hope we get a little bit more on the normal right now. But appreciate you guys still doing everything you can to get out that great food.
Yeah, we're trying. Hey, thank you. I want to thank everybody that's supporting their local businesses. This is a really difficult time for everyone for a lot of different reasons. So everybody kind of coming together in the community is awesome. So it's Omaha's an amazing city. The state, it's amazing. It's just great to see everybody kind of pulling together and trying to get through this thing together. It's awesome.
Derek, appreciate it, my man. Be well, okay?
Hey, thank you, Nick.
That is Derek from Cunningham's Pub and Grill, 108th and Old Mill. Again, just if you're looking to place an order, and I've talked about their menu items so many different times on What's on Tap, it's very easy. Just go to Facebook. We did that. In fact, actually got a message back thanking us for going there on St. Patrick's Day. You get your food in a very timely manner. They'll let you know exactly when it's ready. You have the option of going in and grabbing it, or they'll come out and also allow you to take advantage of curbside as well. And again, if you can think of any business that we need to get information out there for, we would love to help. Again, just email me, Nick at AM590 ESPN. Radio.com. We're going to continue this segment as long as we have to continue to help support our local businesses and especially our local restaurants. All right, coming up in the 5 o'clock hour, going to be talking about a great book out there. The author of the book itself, about Michael Jordan, Legends of the Game, talking about the legacy of Michael Jordan. Author Sam Smith, not the artist, not the singer, Sam Smith, but Sam Smith, the author, going to be joining us at 5:30. We'll hear more from Scott Frost and his conversation on Sports Nightly last night, as well as we get in the 5 o'clock hour.